From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 118 of Little Brother for the 11th of February, 2023. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Now, I'm not sure exactly how this is being done, but there are a number of possible approaches. It appears that SpaceX is blocking the use of its Starlink satellite internet service for the operation of military drones in Ukraine. On the one hand, I can see why they may wish to do this, because allowing this makes their satellites into potential targets for the Russian forces, and taking them down would have effects over the whole of their service area, not just over Ukraine. On the other hand, Rule 303 suggests that since SpaceX has the means to help, they have an obligation to do so. At the end of the day, though, SpaceX is just a corporation and should be expected to behave as one, acting only in its own interests. The PC Security Channel, a YouTube channel, has released a video demonstrating how widespread telemetry has become on contemporary operating systems. Using the open-source protocol analyzer Wireshark, the channel did a comparison between a brand new, unactivated Windows 10 computer system and a Windows XP system in the same state. This represents a time span of approximately 14 years, as XP was released in 2001 and Windows 10 in 2015. The Windows 10 installation reached out to dozens of different websites operated by different organizations, letting all of them know that, hey, there's a new user in town. In comparison, the freshly booted, freshly installed, freshly minted Windows XP system hit the network, looked for its updates, and then did nothing. It settled in and waited for something to do, as it should. The state of Louisiana has a new law on the books requiring that websites and other entities that offer pornography perform reasonable age verification. That's the exact phrase in the law, before allowing access to the sites. The goal? Okay, is laudable. The process, however, might be problematic. The law lists a variety of options, but ultimately they all boil down to providing an ID of some sort to the website, often as a scan. While the law does also require that the site delete the data after performing age verification, it does leave people wondering if the site is truly going to do that. MindGeek, the parent company of Pornhub, for instance, is also the parent company of Traffic Junkie, an advertising network. And it seems really, really unlikely that an advertising network is going to give up data freely. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother.
Thank you.
Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. We have two this week. First up, we have French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo. Around 8 years ago, this publication made headlines as the target of a shooting at their headquarters in Paris after the magazine published drawings of the Prophet Muhammad. Fast forward to last month, and the magazine published unflattering images of Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khomeini. Well, it seems that security researchers at Microsoft are finding that a recent pwn of the magazine involving the exfiltration of private customer data was targeted and directed by an Iranian-based threat actor. Granted, correlation is not causation, but this looks like revenge to me. The other is the favorite social media platform of nerds everywhere, and that is, of course, Reddit. The attack vector was described as a sophisticated phishing campaign targeting Reddit employees. They were able to lift one employee's credentials, and from there to get a hold of some internal documents, code, and statistical tools. The phished employee self-reported in this case, which is a good example of doing IT right. As a result, Reddit were able to respond to it quickly. They are claiming that no non-public data were exfiltrated. However, if it would raise your comfort level, enabling two-factor authentication or at least changing your password would be a reasonable step, and probably things you should be doing anyway. We need to talk about ESXi. ESXi is a Type 1 hypervisor. What that is software that runs directly on the hardware of a server, which in turn provides a platform to run virtual servers on. There are also Type 2 hypervisors, which operate as a program running in an otherwise normal operating system. For instance, KVM is a Type 2 hypervisor that runs on Linux. ESXi, however, is a commercial, enterprise-grade Type 1 hypervisor. To run it, you install it like you were installing an operating system, and then you connect to it to deploy your virtual machines. The advantage of such a system is to squeeze out a little extra performance and, in theory at least, to keep systems on a short leash, so that there's not really any way for an administrator to deploy arbitrary software to the system that might have a negative impact on it. On the other hand, if a vulnerability develops, I believe that a Type 2 hypervisor would be easier to harden because you can patch or reconfigure the underlying OS. With a Type 1 hypervisor, there is no underlying OS. Now, with that in mind, understand also that the IT world runs on virtual servers. They are everywhere. Many on-prem data centers have been profoundly reduced in size by the use of virtual servers running on various hypervisors, with ESXi being the most common. Cloud service providers also provide virtual servers pretty much by definition, which could theoretically be running on any hypervisor, local engineers of that cloud provider being the ones primarily to know whether it's a Type 1 or 2 and what it actually is. But I believe it is safe to say that ESXi has the lion's share of the hypervisor market. That should make this bit of news especially alarming. There is now a ransomware that attacks ESXi. It doesn't attack the virtual servers on it, so it wouldn't matter whether those are Windows or Linux or BSD or something else. It attacks the ESXi host itself. This should be alarming to anyone who works as a system administrator. This has the potential to take an entire company, including possibly cloud service providers, offline entirely very quickly. This is the IT nightmare scenario. Now, the good news is that there are remediations available, and I'll talk about those in the next segment. But if the idea behind using a proprietary, closed-sourced, walled garden operating system is to keep it safe from exploitation, it failed. All right, I have some material that's going to be a little bit dry, but I bring it up because it's important and it concerns active vulnerabilities. First up, if you have a system that uses sudo, which by definition is going to be one or another type of Unix, probably Linux, and you have users who log in to a shell with less than administrator privileges, and sudo is installed and used by those users to get selective access to root files, then you need to address it. There are articles out that describe how to exploit CVE-2023-22809er, which provides a way to use the sudo edit command to run an arbitrary command as root by setting the user's editor environment variable to an arbitrary command, including arguments and flags. The problem is remedied in sudo versions after 1.9.12 Papa 2, so run sudo --version and find out what you're running. If it is between 1.8 and 1.9.12 Papa 2, then you know what to do. Patch your systems. Second, CISA have issued guidance that if you are using OpenSSL versions 3.0.0, 2.2.2, or 1.0.2, that there are numerous vulnerabilities that can allow an attacker to get access to sensitive information. Once again, the mantra applies. Patch your systems. Finally, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, there is ESXi and ransomware. The CISA have guidance on that as well, including a script that you can use to remove the ransomware if you have it. So go check it out at cisa.gov, and once all the dust has settled, patch your systems. The Conversation has an article out this past week concerning ChatGPT, which, for those of you who have missed it, is a recently developed artificial intelligence that has taken the internet by storm. To give you an idea of how much, The Conversation claims, and I don't see any reason to dispute it, that ChatGPT is the fastest growing consumer application ever launched. So what does it do? It converses and it answers questions. It's a chatbot. Ask it to do a thing, and as long as that thing can be done by way of a block of text that it sends back to you, it will do its level best to do that thing. It answers questions, it writes codes, it even does impressions. Now, some people are downright scared of it. There is fear that this might take over some sectors of the economy or displace intellectual jobs. It's probably a valid concern, but do keep in mind that mechanization and automation have always been a threat to job security, and yet society hasn't collapsed because people adapt and move on. This is just another round of that. So, Uri Gal, the author of the article in The Conversation, has a few concerns about the data privacy implications of ChatGPT. Like any AI, ChatGPT has learned what it has learned by consuming a lot of input. In this particular case, since the input is readily available, it is information scraped from the internet. So did you author some of that input? I probably did. I am a believer in the idea that information, especially about skills, should be shared openly and freely. So in truth, it doesn't concern me that I may have provided some input to ChatGPT. I've answered questions, especially on Reddit, about IT topics, radio frequencies, dietary advice, what to do when a loved one dies, finding courage to do daring things, making peace with who you are, and even how to respond when your child comes out as gay. I put this information into public spaces so that it can benefit whomever needs it. That includes an AI that has been charged with learning about the world that it inhabits. We cannot fight the advance of AI. This isn't even a matter of opening Pandora's box. This was going to happen sooner or later. In fact, this isn't even the first. It is, however, the first one to make us sit up and pay attention, because while Stable Diffusion and DALL-E were painting interesting but surreal pictures for us, pictures that were usually obviously not real because some basic ideas were not understood, and while Transformer was amusing us by taking texts that we provided and then continuing the narrative, often with decent results, none of those AIs crossed the threshold of actually being potentially useful, or at least giving the impression of usefulness. Getting back to the data privacy implications, basically, I put it to you that there are none. Information that appears on the internet is public. There may be copyright implications, but no privacy implications. When you put information on an internet platform, you are publishing. It's no coincidence that the words publish and public look so similar to each other. Ultimately, the concerns that ChatGPT's existence raise are merely the highest expression that we have seen yet of the idea that what gets published on the internet is there forever. Some countries have got a right to be forgotten or similar legislation, but ultimately, such laws are fighting the laws of nature and are doomed to lose. ChatGPT is not a new concern. If it worries you, then it's your history, not the AI, that you are really worried about. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Lotus, Ron, and Fongaboo for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Punt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. Let's start that paragraph again. Profoundly reduced. Let's start it again. To know which one and whether or not it's a type 1 or 2. Yeah, okay, let's look at that again. All right, we're going to do that whole paragraph again. Have been profoundly reduced in size. Profoundly, yeah. And 1.9er double P2, which provides a way to use the sub-edit. Use the sub-edit. Mm-hmm.